This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haidar, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is The Full Story. The US presidential election will be a rematch between two well-known yet deeply unpopular candidates. Joe Biden has won the Democratic nomination.
The threat to democracy must be defended. This is the moment to speak the truth and to bury the lies.
But the 81-year-old is the oldest president to ever seek re-election, raising questions about his age and mental competency. His opponent, Republican Donald Trump, wants the keys to the White House back.
He says, "You're not going to be a dictator, are you?" I said, "No, no, no, other than day one."
So how are American voters feeling about the choice that lies ahead? Today, the presidential rematch no one wanted. It's Thursday, the 14th of March.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making the time. You've been traveling around different parts of America to report on the US election. How would you describe the mood amongst voters?
Oh, it is not good. This is, we call it the election nobody wants. And that's because we have two candidates who are very unpopular and a lot of Americans who are really not looking forward to their choice in November.
Lauren Gambino is a senior political correspondent for The Guardian US, based in Washington, D.C.
I spoke to one voter in South Carolina. She was hoping to vote for Nikki Haley, the Republican challenger to Donald Trump. And she described a choice between Biden and Trump, like choosing between a hedgehog and a porcupine. And I think she could tell I was a little confused. So she said they're both very bad options. And so across the country, voter after voter I talked to, nobody wants to make this choice. Trump was hugely controversial concerning presidency for a lot of Americans. But Joe Biden took over at the height of the pandemic, and many Americans feel like the economy isn't better. Suddenly, there are wars around the world that they say didn't happen under Trump. And so they're very concerned for a Biden re-election as well.
Last week, Joe Biden delivered his State of the Union address and got pretty fired up. For those of us outside the US, what is the significance of the State of the Union and do American voters care about it?
The State of the Union is all pomp and circumstance.
Good evening from the nation's capital tonight. President Biden is just moments away from delivering his State of the Union address to the American people and, of course, to the world.
It's this annual tradition where the Speaker of the House invites the president down to Congress and the president gives this big formal speech. And it is true that there are very few Americans who tune into the nightly news and probably watch the whole long address. But on the other hand, it is one of the major platforms left to a president to really get their message out. Typically, you see a president use this speech to say all of the good things that they believe they've done in their time in office and what they want to achieve. But Biden came into it with the stakes as high as they ever could be for a presidential address. He is battling concerns about his age. At 81, he is the oldest person ever to seek the presidency. He's the oldest president in American history. And he knew he had to come out and really look aggressive and energetic. And at the same time, you know, he also knew that this is probably the biggest audience he'll get to make his pitch to the American voters. at least all in one go. And so he really used the moment, I think, to go after his opponent, which is something you don't typically see. I mean, he had Republicans and Democratic members of Congress trapped in this chamber. And he also had the Supreme Court justices. They were all under one roof, not able to leave for the duration of this address. And he went after the Republicans for the laws that they'd passed for supporting Donald Trump. He went after the justices for overturning the constitutional right to an abortion in the United States.
Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. My God, what freedom else would you take away?
So it was the most alive we've seen him in a long time. He was so animated. He was speaking so fast that we saw some conservative news outlets flip from saying he was way too old to saying, what's going on? He's way too hyper. So it was quite a performance, and he knew he needed to really try to dispel concerns about his age. And that was his first attempt.
So as you've said, two deeply unpopular candidates look all but guaranteed to become their respective nominees for their parties. What is Biden's pitch to voters? What were the main messages in his State of the Union address?
So I think the framework for his pitch is very much, I'm not the other guy. Don't you remember what the other guy did when he was in office? You couldn't turn on the TV. You couldn't look at a news alert. You couldn't get on Twitter without hyperventilating that we were going to start another war or some new controversy. So part of his pitch is really reminding voters that Donald Trump was a chaotic president and that he would do more of that if he were reelected. There's this phenomenon called Trump amnesia, and the Biden campaign insists Americans have it, where they've kind of just moved on, that they can't remember things that happened before the pandemic. And so they're trying to remind voters both what Trump did in office and what he has said he wants to do. So that's kind of the framework. His overall pitch is that he took over at an incredibly tumultuous time for America. It was the pandemic. It was post January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. And he really righted the ship. He was a steady pair of hands who has improved the economy. Sure, it's not as good as it should be. Inflation is still high. Groceries are still too expensive, but he's improved the economy.
Now our economy is literally the envy of the world. 15 million new jobs in just 3 years. A record. A record.
He vows to restore reproductive rights if you can just give him enough senators, which is a very tall task. But he says that's what he would do. He promised to remain an ally of Ukraine and continue to send aid to Ukraine as they battle Russia.
My message to President Putin, who I've known for a long time, is simple. We will not walk away.
Biden also announced his commitment for humanitarian aid in Gaza with a temporary pier that would allow aid to flow into Gaza. And he also pushed for a 6-week ceasefire that his administration has been trying to broker in the region.
A temporary pier will enable a massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Gaza every day.
He also offered a humorous take on his age, talking about how he was old, but his ideas were young.
On that point of age, over the weekend, Joe Biden released a new ad.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people.
What is your assessment of how he is going about trying to alleviate the concerns that people have about his age?
It's been an evolution because initially he didn't want to talk about it. And now he's trying to make light of it. And in his State of the Union speech and in some of the ads that we're seeing come out of his campaign, we're now starting to hear him say things like, yeah, I'm old, but it's not about your age. It's about how old your ideas are. I have new ideas. I have fresh ideas. And he had this line about Trump representing the oldest ideas of all, hate, fear.
Hate, anger, revenge, retribution are the oldest of ideas. But you can't lead America with ancient ideas. It'll only take us back. You lead America, the land of possibilities, You need a vision for the future and what can and should be done.
So he's trying to flip the idea on its head, as old as he is, that he is the standard bearer of, you know, fresh progressive ideas. And Trump is actually the one trying to take America backwards. Mm-hmm. And we should mention that Trump is 77 years old. He is not Biden's junior by a long shot.
Let's turn back to Israel and Gaza. How important has Biden's handling of this issue been to Democrat voters?
It would be hard to understate how big of an issue that this is turning out to be. And that's because Biden has a really big, broad coalition that he needs to reassemble. And it ranges from, you know, the furthest left progressives to the most centrist Republicans who just do not like Donald Trump and need somewhere else to go. And so where he's finding this to be an issue is certainly on the left. There's a lot of young progressives who are furious with his position. They think that not just his policy, but that Biden rhetorically hasn't shown the same sympathy for Palestinians that he has for Israelis. And there is just, it's a really deep, deep issue that people feel very viscerally. I honestly haven't reported on an issue, I think, that has caused so much just anguish among voters. And so I think right now, Biden's facing a huge challenge with young people. And then with specifically a very small constituency, but an important one, Arab Americans and Muslim Americans. And they're both electorally important because they're concentrated in one of the biggest battleground states of Michigan. It's hard to see Biden winning the White House without winning Michigan. Young people are hard to turn out to begin with. And, you know, if you give them something that they feel is deeply immoral, at least for some of the voters I've talked to, I don't see how they get past this. They believe it's a matter of morality. And so for that, I just don't know how Biden wins them back. And so the consequences are huge. They're high. And Israel-Gaza for Biden is a very personal. He feels very attached to the project of Israel. And this is something that there is a true generational gap, and those around him have been unable to really move him. In recent weeks, we are seeing, you know, obviously his frustration with the Prime Minister Netanyahu bubble over. But when you talk to some of the Democratic voters, they're saying that's not enough. They need to see much more action. They want to see the U.S. threaten to withhold aid to Israel if they don't change course. They want to see much more aggressive response from the U.S. government that they just haven't seen yet. This could, you know, be one of the issues that decides the election.
Something I've heard Australians wonder out loud is Biden it? Could someone else step up?
It's not just Australians. It's something that Americans have asked as well. I hear it often. So barring Biden becoming incapacitated or, you know, no longer being with us, I don't see him being replaced. The Democrats had the opportunity to go with someone who was not an 81-year-old white man, and they decided to push ahead with Joe Biden. And I think they're really stuck with him, for better or worse, unless something dramatic happens. You do hear, and I'm always surprised, because Biden kind of made this offhanded comment when he was running in 2020 about wanting to be a bridge. And so there was this real belief among a wide swath of Americans, I've come to understand, who really saw him as Mr. Normal. He was going to come in, you know, not be Trump for 4 years and then step down. And his decision to stay in power, I think, really upset a lot of Americans, not just young progressives, but Republicans who voted for him, really thought that there would be more of a bench that he would make way for. And unfortunately for Democrats, actually, this administration hasn't done a great job of elevating younger Democrats who he could hand the baton to.
So what about Vice President Kamala Harris? What role is she playing?
You would think of her as being the obvious successor to Joe Biden, but even she has struggled to sort of carve out her own role in the administration and is not really seen as the heir apparent. But I will say, in recent weeks, as me and my colleague just reported, she has started to, I think, come into her own. She's found her groove on the campaign trail, which is new from 2020. She's, I think, found her niche, and that is trying to reach these voters that don't like Joe Biden, but that he needs to win over to win the election. And so those are the people who are really angry about the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, which was the loss of the constitutional right to an abortion. And these are voters who should go to the ballot and should vote Democratic. But many of them are disillusioned or not sure that they want to vote, don't like their options and might look at a third party. So she is out there, she's touring the country, and she is trying to remind people what the stakes are for abortion rights, for reproductive access.
Here in Alabama, they attack the freedom to use IVF treatment. Women and couples denied the ability to fulfill their dream of having a child. And consider the irony. On the one hand, these extremists tell women they do not have the freedom to end an unwanted pregnancy. And on the other hand, these extremists tell women they do not have the freedom to start a family.
And so, you know, that's become a big part of her pitch as well, that, you know, Republicans have just gone too far on reproductive rights. And then she's also become something of a messenger on the war in Gaza. Kamala Harris has always been seen as more sympathetic to the Palestinians than Joe Biden. It's been reported that she's really worked hard behind the scenes to press Biden to push for more aid into Gaza, to always remember that Islamophobia is on the rise as well as anti-Semitism in the United States. And so she is seen as someone who is better received, at least on this issue. That being said, she was just in Arizona and protesters threw red paint at her because she is a face of the administration. But all that being said, she is still a better messenger to these Democrats than Joe Biden is at the moment.
Next, what happens if Trump becomes president again?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I want to turn now to Donald Trump. How did he respond to Joe Biden's State of the Union address?
So Donald Trump has been trying to paint this vision of America over the last 3 years under Biden's presidency as a really dark place overrun by immigrants and, you know, a terrible economy, just a really grim, dark spectacle.
What's happened now is a horror show. The country, our country, is being laughed at all over the world. Over the past 3 years, Biden has actively aided and abetted the importation of millions and millions of illegal alien migrants and resettled them into your communities.
It's a lot of anger, and that is really Trump's pitch. It's one of retribution. Mm-hmm. It's sort of 2016 and 2020, but angrier and meaner and more aggressive. You know, he wants to go further and do more and expel more people and have mass deportation camps. So I think his response is really his campaign message, which is that he wants Americans to believe that the country has gotten much worse in the last 3 years and only he can fix it, as he likes to say.
And so how does his view of foreign policy differ from Biden? What would he do as president with, for example, the issues of Ukraine and Israel and Gaza?
So Trump has always been more of an isolationist, and he in particular has a very complicated relationship with Russia and Ukraine. That was the source of his first impeachment when he was president. And he has pretty much flat out said he will not support additional aid to Ukraine if he's reelected. All through his presidency, he would make kind remarks toward Vladimir Putin. He was someone who doesn't really see these old alliances as applying to him. He, you know, has made some statements that have shocked European allies, saying he would not come to NATO's defense if a country was delinquent in their payments, kind of, again, misrepresenting how NATO functions and works.
The NATO countries have to pay up. They're not paying up. They're not paying what they should. And they laugh at the stupidity of the United States of America, where we have a guy that gives $60 billion every time somebody comes and asks for it. We shouldn't be doing that. They're laughing at us. They think we're the stupid country because of our leadership.
Those types of comments really shock American allies. Similarly, on Gaza, Trump had formed an alliance with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and he has indicated that if both are in power, that he would, you know, similarly let him do what he wants. He wouldn't stand in his way in Gaza. And I should say, Trump doesn't, you know, always clearly articulate his foreign policy stances, and they're often driven by relationships with leaders or just sort of his gut instinct. But we can guess that he would be pretty hands-off when it comes to Israel, and he would not be in favor of sending aid to Ukraine.
So we've seen Trump and Biden go head-to-head in an election before. Does this feel different than last time?
Yes, this is a rematch, but it is very different, and in a couple key ways. So one is just the context. In 2020, it was a pandemic, and Biden was running on being the responsible leader. And so he actually wasn't campaigning. He got mocked for running a basement campaign. His campaign wasn't going door to door, knocking on doors, trying to get voters out and registered and, you know, show up at the polls. They were trying to do everything virtually and remote. And Biden wasn't shaking hands, kissing babies. Trump was doing big campaign rallies and, you know, trying to press his case that he had handled the pandemic well and it was time to move on. This time around, we're going to see both of them on the trail, which will be different. And I think that means that their campaigns are going to matter a lot more, especially when you're looking at such tiny margins. The other big factor is Biden himself. He's now been president for 4 years. He has this record behind him, and he's deeply unpopular. In that sense, I've heard a lot of pollsters and strategists compare it more to 2016, when you had the Democrat Hillary Clinton, who was just a really widely known and widely unpopular candidate. You know, everyone felt like they knew her. And so you had her and Trump, and both were very unpopular. And you have that case again. And as we started this conversation with, many people don't like their options. So there's a lot of unpredictability in terms of who voters will choose if they really get to the ballot and they just cannot check the box for either Trump or Biden. And at the same time, you know, there's a lot of people who are just really disillusioned who may not even show up on election day.
And so if Biden wins, given what we saw on January 6, are Americans afraid of what happens if Trump loses for a second time?
Yes, I think this is a really big concern. And it's something that you've seen elections experts, elections workers really try to prepare for. After January 6th, the Senate chose not to convict Trump after he was impeached by the House, and therefore they allowed him to run again. But the Senate did enact an Elections Act, which is meant to strengthen the way the electoral votes are counted to make it harder to try to overturn an election in the way that Trump and his supporters did on January 6th. So we have seen some reaction to try to, you know, safeguard the institution and the process in a way that it was open to vulnerabilities in 2020. But you'll see online the chatter, even from what I've heard from voters on the campaign trail, there is not just fears, but, you know, calls for a civil war and violence if Trump isn't elected. And you'll hear from Trump's own team. They're already trying to seed the narrative that it wouldn't be possible for him to lose. He started to say that Biden is bringing in millions of immigrants just so that they can vote illegally. And there's no evidence of this, but he's already putting out there these possibilities that then can muddy the water in a really close election.
And if Trump does win and returns to the White House, what are the concerns for democracy and the rule of law in the United States?
I mean, Trump himself has said that he would be a dictator only on day one. I mean, we didn't even hear this from Trump in 2016, this sort of open flirtation with autocracy and just being very plain about the desire to seek retribution. I mean, he has made it quite clear that he would use all levers of power to go after his political opponents, to go after the people he believes have wronged him. And, you know, I didn't even mention, but I mean, he is facing 91 criminal charges. Mm-hmm. So he has plenty of political opponents that he wants to go after. And he's made clear he'd weaponize the Department of Justice. And I think what's really concerning is that we knew during his first presidency that there were people around him who had served other presidents. There were people around him in the military, there were, you know, political leaders who at least attempted to constrain him. And those people have all been run out of office, either lost elections, stepped down, resigned, retired. And so there just aren't that many people left who would stand up to him. And he has surrounded himself with complete loyalists. And that is, I think, a very dangerous prospect for the presidency and the American people.
Lauren, it's been fascinating hearing your insights and your perspective. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Lauren Gambino, a senior political correspondent for The Guardian US. You can find more of Lauren's work on theguardian.com. And we've linked to her latest piece on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Alison Chan, sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo. The executive producers of this episode were Hannah Parks and Miles Martignoni. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Catch you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.